Welcome to episode 237 of The Low Blow on SouthwestFight.com and MyMMAnews.com. I am Justin Gidgem, joined by Jorge Hernandez. What's up, man?
Hi, Justin.
You seem kind of down. What's up?
Just overwhelmed with, you know, stuff going on in life. Just tired of work.
And are you watching SummerSlam this weekend, considering Brock Lesnar's been all over ESPN promoting it? Coach, Jonathan Coachman, who was formerly at the WWE, he's going to do some coverage for ESPN. Are you one of those, you know, early wrestling fans that might take the plunge and watch it?
Wait, so what's happening? What's the main event again?
Not to make this a wrestling podcast real quickly, the main event's Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar, because we all, you know, it was a big deal a couple of years ago, Brock Lesnar breaking the Undertaker's WrestleMania streak. That's pretty much the big time match. John Cena's on the card. There's some other good stuff on there.
I guess I might be interested in seeing that.
Well, it's on the WWE Network, so you pay, you know, it's like Fight Pass. Yeah, Tim, you know, actually, since you'll be a first-time subscriber, you get it for free. You can just cancel it after the 1 month is over.
Oh, can I? So, huh.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like a bad deal at all, actually.
Yeah, if you're bored. The only thing is it's 4 hours long. It's a four-hour show.
Jesus.
So that might be kind of...
And you know what? Screw it. Let's turn this into an MMA a wrestling podcast for a little bit.
All right.
Weren't the old Survivor Series that long? You remember when they used to have, like, the four-on-fours? Do they still have that?
They do, and the shows, I mean, they're always, besides WrestleMania, the pay-per-views are 3 hours long.
Okay.
Only for WrestleMania is when it's 4 hours long. And I guess for SummerSlam, they want to make it kind of a bigger event. There have been even rumors in the past of running a stadium show for SummerSlam, but they've scrapped that. So this year it's in the Barclays Center. So, you know, for wrestling fans, it's fun. I mean, there's the night before, which WWE is running another show called NXT. It's kind of their up-and-comer shows. NXT's really gotten popular among wrestling fans within the past couple of years. So that show's happening the night before. So, you know, if you're a wrestling fan, it should be entertaining nevertheless. But for casual fans, I would say, you know, order the network and watch the last 2 hours. But if you have people coming over, you can make a whole day out of it. So you can check that out. On today's show, we're going to discuss this new development, which will have Carlos Condon fighting in a stadium show against Robbie Lawler. We'll discuss that. We'll discuss a fight of the year candidate in boxing from last week. And we'll kind of break down some boxing news somewhat. But as always, you can get in touch with the show through social media, through at The Low Blow, where we have our tweets, also through Facebook, through The Low Blow Podcast. Also, we're available on Stitcher, and we're available always on Spreaker and on iTunes and on Podomatic as well. So, man, let's get into it. Let's discuss this stadium show, which I am shocked. I did not see this coming. I don't know if you did, Jorge. But apparently UFC 193 will take place on Sunday in Australia, but will take place Saturday in the United States when Robbie Lawler faces Carlos Condit. Now, the Etihad Stadium can sit around 55,000 fans, which I think the UFC is gunning to do here. Here's a quote from one of UFC's executives that is holding the event. Excuse me, actually, it's from the Etihad Stadium CEO. Here's the quote here. Around 56,000 fans occupied every seat and standing space for a game of international rugby in 2013, and we're anticipating a similar crowd. So that's pretty surprising. What do you make of this, Jorge? I mean, it's one thing for an international rugby game, a match to take place there when the sport's popular. But, I mean, even though this is the first time UFC's making their way to Melbourne, I mean, I love this fight between Lawler and Carlos Condit, but is that going to attract casual fans? I mean, we have no idea what's going down in Australia, so it's kind of hard to predict. But what do you make of this?
I mean, it's a risk, but I don't know if it's a risk for the UFC because it's the stadium that typically tends to bring these organizations in. I guess for the most part, I mean, it might be the UFC that was kind of, hey, let us in, let us host an event there. I guess it's business. It goes one way or the other. But for Melbourne,
yeah,
it's a city about the size of Chicago. So would this be possible, a new intrigue into it? I think it might. I think if I had to guess what the minimum or I guess if I had to put my guess in it, I think they're going to be able to do 30,000, Jay. Like, I don't know what about Australia just, you know, intrigues me a little bit about that, but I think they'll be able to do something like that. You know, and as far as the Southern Hemisphere, I believe they're at the tail end of, what is it, fall?
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. I get those two confused all the time. But I don't think it'll be too difficult to, you know, to at least get a decent amount of people there. It's something new for the area. Again, it's a pretty damn big city at almost, you know, at 4.5 million people. So, what the hell? I think I might do at least 30,000.
I mean, it's just a trip to, just.
Right. It's mysterious. Especially yeah. the main event that they're having where they could have easily had it in the southwestern U.S., whether it be, you know, Phoenix, L.A., Vegas, or hell, even Albuquerque, because Carlos Khan is from there. But,
sure,
you know, this is just kind of out of nowhere. And, you know, the co-main event apparently is Antonio Silva and Mark Hunt, which could potentially be, you know, maybe we're hoping it'll be what their first fight was. But
I think
a lot has been taken out of both guys for that to even take place. The undercard that they built so far isn't that good, Jay. You have Mark Hunt versus Antonio Silva, Bisping versus Whitaker, which actually might be a pretty damn good fight in Bisping and Whitaker. And Kyle Noak, the native from Australia, will also be on the card. But for Lawler and Condit to try to carry this card on their own, I don't know. I mean, there has to be a lot of just interest from casual fans there in Melbourne if they're hoping to. I don't think they'll sell it out. I mean, 55,000, absolutely no way. But I wouldn't be surprised if they get 50 or 60% of that stadium filled.
Yeah, it's a shocker for sure, considering the rumors of a stadium show was, you know, with Ronda and Connor. Maybe that's the reason why they've shied away from Cowboy Stadium. But it seems weird that they would go with Sydney instead of domestically in the States. That seems just bizarre to me. But nevertheless, go ahead.
I was going to say that reading this fact online here, this is from Wikipedia. This is the third stadium venue to host a UFC event. UFC 125, Gustafsson Johnson was one, and of course,
that's right.
That was out in out in Europe,
Sweden,
right? Yeah. And then Rogers Center in Canada. Wait, what took place in Canada? No, that was
George St. Pierre.
That was St. Pierre. Yeah.
Yeah, Jake Shields.
So it is kind of random to have Carlos Khan and Robbie Lawler headlining a stadium card.
Two non-Australians, too. I mean, you look at the other cards, you know, George St. Pierre, hero in Canada, Alexander Gustafsson, you know, super popular in Sweden, and you have people, you know, staying up all night long to watch that fight. This one, you don't really have that Australian draw, so I'm just confused as to why they're running this venue. But nevertheless, it's a good opportunity for Carlos Khan, you know, the biggest, you know, show of his career.
Absolutely.
I want to go and break down some boxing real quick with you, Jorge. I'm a fight of the year candidate between Christoph Golovkin and Marco Hutt. Marco Hutt was zeroing in boxing history, looking to get a record 14th 200-pound title defense. Seems like that was going to happen until Golovkin made a huge comeback just in the 11th round with a left hook straight. I think it's all over the internet. It's gone viral in terms of this fight and the end of this fight. Marco Hutt, who's 30 years old, has been world champion since 2009. Your thoughts on this fight, considering this was just on, you know, Premier Boxing Champions, I think only on Spike. Certainly a landmark victory. Do you see this being a contender for Fight of the Year when it comes to December?
I think so. I think we'd put it in the top five when the year is over. Let's not forget that Ruslan Provodnikov, Lucas Matisse happened this year. Oh, man.
Sure.
I had two other ones that just escaped my mind. You put me on the spot there, Jay. But but this is definitely up there. As far as cruiserweight fights go, Jay, that was a sensational fight, especially on a network
it was.
That you didn't expect it on. I think Golovkin was something like a 6-1 underdog in this fight, Jay, which is very surprising. Both guys were making their American debut, and for them to put that kind of show was just sensational. I mean, for the most part, Marco fought in Germany and I think in Switzerland also, and it's just awesome to see these two guys, and of course from countries that have fighting in their DNA in Poland and Germany, just bring it to each other in the U.S. out of all places was pretty amazing to see. So you mentioned Hook was going for the 14th defense of that cruiserweight title, which would have broken a record that he's now tied for. And I mean, for people that didn't know who Krzysztof Glowacki was before this fight, definitely know who he is now. I mean, it's not like he was fighting slouches out in Europe, guys with more than 30, more than 50 wins, but, you know, not necessarily world-renowned names. And all of a sudden, here you come against Marco Hutt, arguably one of the best fighters in the cruiserweight division history, and you knock him out. Just sensational fight from both guys.
Yep, and Huck on the scorecards had the lead. He had 96-93 twice and 95-94 at the time of the knockout. So, you know, he was in the lead with the judges on that scorecard. I want to shift and discuss Joanna Golovkin. You mentioned how he's a huge favorite, I believe 14-1
right.
He said. And now you have his trainer, Abel Sanchez, saying that he sees the fight ending in four rounds with a knockout by Triple G. And we saw, you know, Triple G has been, you know, was on ESPN pushing him here. Ultimately, this is a good, I think if he just went impressively against David Lemieux, the fight's really good. This is a springboard fight towards something bigger. Where do you see Golovkin here? Because now, you know, we see Canelo and Cotto, their big match. I mean, is this one of those things where guys are going to avoid fighting him if he does get a clear victory over David Lemieux? I mean, I don't want to write David Lemieux off here, but Golovkin's star power, and considering, you know, Floyd and Manny's, you know, exit from the sport within a year or two, here's a guy with a lot of potential. And considering just the trouble that Cotto and Canelo had, where exactly do you see Golovkin fitting in here?
It's tough. I think guys are going to avoid him.
That's unfortunate.
No, I mean, what do they have to win right now if they do fight him? I'm hoping, Jay, that Saul Alvarez will come up, will take that shot, and both guys will fight one another at 154 pounds or maybe at some sort of catch weight. Since Alvarez is fighting Cotto, I think Alvarez might try to stretch it, but I think Alvarez is going to bend to the urging of the public to fight Gennady Golovkin, and I think that fight happens within a year and a half. I don't think it happens as the next fight for either guy, but I think people will start calling out Alvarez and saying, are you afraid of Gennady Golovkin? And that Mexican bravado is going to get the best of Alvarez, and he's going to sign a contract to fight Golovkin. It also helps that Gennady Golovkin, one, has a Mexican trainer in Abel Sanchez, and two, that he has a huge Mexican following in the Western United States, man.
That's true. That's an excellent point. So, yeah, I think he's so entertaining, and I think he, like we've discussed before 1,000 times, he's got that awkwardness to him that I think he can appeal to not only that Mexican fan base, but also that casual boxing fan as well. Not to mention he's a knockout artist, so hopefully that comes to fruition. We jumped the gun last weekend saying that UFC Fight Night 74 was last weekend. We're wrong. It's this weekend, and I'm pretty sure it's because it says August 23rd and Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada, main event, Max Holloway, Charles Oliveira. We broke down the fight last week. Okay, card. But again, I think I like this fight a lot, and with Max Holloway, I'm picking him to win. And again, I think, you know, Luke Thomas on his podcast brought up a very good point. You know, taking a look back at Conor McGregor's, you know, fight history, people like to criticize it. But, you know, Conor beat Max Holloway with a torn ACL. I mean, that's pretty impressive considering, you know, Max Holloway could be, you know, a serious title contender within a year or two.
No, I completely agree with you. And this fight, I think, you know, as far as how – I don't know. It's just Max, he's in an interesting – you know, just position, because he's very exciting to see. And, you know, this fight is just another – essentially, I hate to say this about Charles Oliveira, because I think he has a chance in this bout, but it's almost like he's a stepping stone for Max Holloway.
Sure.
I feel bad for Charles Oliveira, because the only image I have whenever I picture him is him folding against Cub Swanson, dude.
Yeah.
Like, and it's just so hard for me to get that out, but – with Max Holloway, you got a kid, literally, I mean, I like to say a kid because, you know, he's almost a decade younger than I am, but 13-3, just turned 23 years old. You know, guy from Hawaii, what Hawaii carries that prestige of having one of the best fighters of all time in BJ Penn. And like I said, he's exciting to watch. He beat Cub Swanson in his last fight. Most of his fights, I think, try to think back. Cole Miller, he fought before Cub Swanson. I can't remember if that ended earlier or not.
That was unanimous.
That was unanimous decision. That might be the only fight in the UFC that he's had that's ended in a decision. Wait, I'm lying. I looked at it now. He had a couple of split decisions against Bermudez and Garcia. Wow, he fought Leonard Garcia? I forgot about that, man. Holy crap.
Yeah. He's really grown up in the UFC. I mean, trial by fire. I remember when he made his UFC debut, you know, just being that young and just, I think he took a fight on short notice and that's usually how you get in the UFC. You take a fight on a short notice, usually, you know, you might lose, but then you start your career. And really with the losses, again, we talk about this in MMA, as long as you can put together winning streaks, I mean, losses are not the end of the world. You can still come back and still be a contender. And I think Max Holloway is a great example of that. And I think, you know, you talk about his age. I mean, he's only 23, but you think he's like 35 years old just because of his fights, you know. You know, he's 35 years old in UFC years, even though he's 23 in real life. So, nevertheless, should be an entertaining main event. The rest of the card's okay, but the main event should be exciting to watch. I think that's going to wrap up our show, man. Anything else you wanted to add before we say goodbye for this week?
I think that's it. It's not necessarily a busy week this week when it comes to MMA and boxing, but it will heat up here coming down toward the end of the year. It typically is. The fall is always such a random hot time for, you know, for both sports, but hopefully the momentum can carry over there.
Well, it's going to be especially hot for the UFC because all of the champions are healthy and active, so you know, 85% to 90% of the fights stay intact. I mean, it's going to be an unbelievable fall, especially for New Mexico fighters with, you know, Dotson, Cerrone, both fighting Condon. You know, three fighters from the Albuquerque area fighting for titles. I mean, that's unbelievable. So that could be really a game changer, even if one of them wins a title, let alone three of them. And real quickly, your thoughts, if that does happen, let's say they go 2 out of 3, you know, what does that exactly mean in terms of putting UFC, you know, kind of having Albuquerque on the radar? Not necessarily for shows, just because, you know, I just feel like Albuquerque's never gotten its just due within the UFC community in terms of a base here, in terms of not only having events, but just having a presence here, if you know what I mean. And certainly having, you know, two champions, I think, will do that. What are your thoughts on that, if that has happened?
It'll solidify it as the capital of combat sports, at least for the time being, the way it was in the 90s when Johnny Tapia and you know, Danny Romero was fighting out of here. We had some kickboxing world champions. Mike Winkeljan is, as a matter of fact, one of them back then.
Sure.
So I think that'll definitely put that spotlight back on the city that it hasn't had since. I mean, it's not like we necessarily lost it, but I mean, maybe a little bit, but I think it'll bring a hype back to the city because over the past 2.5 years, Jay, we've seen and I'm going to call it a deterioration of MMA events and boxing events happening in this city. I think it'll revive that here for the time being. Additionally, you mentioned the UFC possibly, you know, having events. I'm not sure if you, I don't think anyone saw my tweet on Saturday night, but I did confirm with a member of the commission that the UFC is looking, there's nothing official yet, to be back in Albuquerque in February or March with perhaps Holly Holm being on that card.
That's good. I think that's not a surprise just because how well the event was with John Dotson and with Benjamin Henderson. That was a great event at Tingley, as we've discussed, even though the card didn't quite deliver. Just the event itself was probably one of the top sporting events here in Albuquerque ever. So hopefully, especially Holly Holm fighting, you know, possibly for a title shot, I think that could be a huge event. So, man, I think I lied before, but this time, for real, that's going to wrap up our show. As always, you can get in touch with the show through social media, through Facebook, through Twitter, and also we're available on YouTube as well. And don't forget to catch the past episodes of Combat Sports Weekly with Jorge Hernandez and Jody Escobel. Some great interviews. Catch up on that as well on our YouTube page. So for Jorge Hernandez, I am Justin Goodrum. You will listen to episode 237 of The Low Blow on MyMMAnews.com. and southwestfight.com. Enjoy the fights this weekend. We will see you next week.
Peace.